We're doing the Navi Yeshayah. We're up to what's called the 8th chapter and the 9th Pasuk. And the Navi had been describing how the army of Sancheiriv is going to come and envelop Israel up to the neck, like waters that come up to the neck, referencing the idea that Sancheiriv is going to conquer all of Judea up to Jerusalem, leaving very little behind. And that will be after he conquers many nations. And so the Navi continues and says, Ro'u. One interpretation of the word ro'u is like hitro'a'u, which means to destroy, to break. So ro'u amim, destroy nations, because Sancheiriv would destroy many nations. And then vachotu, and then they themselves would be scared, they themselves would be destroyed. As we know, when Sancheiriv finally lay his great siege around Jerusalem, he himself was destroyed. That's one interpretation of the pasuk. A second interpretation is, ro'u amim comes from the word re'a, from the word friend. And then the pasuk means, ro'u amim, unite the nations, as the nations united behind Sancheiriv to lay siege on Jerusalem, and vachotu, and then they themselves were destroyed. Ve'ha'azinu kol merchakei haaretz, and listen to the extent of the land, all the different nations that joined forces with Sancheiriv to destroy Israel, all of them should hear. Hit azeru, they girdle themselves, preparing for war, vachotu, and then they fall again themselves. Hit azeru, as much as they strengthen themselves to war, vachotu, then they too will be destroyed. So again, we're up to Isaiah, Yeshaya, the eighth, what they call the eighth chapter, now the tenth pasuk. Utsu eitza vitufar. They will plot, they will prepare a plan, but Hashem will undo it. Daberu davar velo yakum ki imanu el. Daberu davar, they speak things, they plan things, velo yakum, and it shall not be ki imanu el, because Hashem is with us and He hasn't given up on us. So the Navi is telling them that as bad as it's going to be, that Judea will be overtaken down to the capital. All that's left is the capital, Jerusalem. But ultimately they will not fall. And this goes back to the idea that the Navi was told earlier to name his son Immanuel, God is with us, because Hashem hasn't forsaken Judea, He hasn't forsaken Jerusalem. As bad as it's going to seem, nonetheless, Jerusalem will not fall at this time. Ki cho amar Adonai elai bechezkat hayad, because this is what Hashem told me, bechezkat hayad, that with Hashem's strong hand He will undo their plans. And this is referencing the idea that there was some plague that destroyed the camp of Sancheiriv when they lay siege on Jerusalem. Hashem made some miracle that the people all died around Jerusalem. Utsu eitza, so says Hashem, b'chezkat hayad, with a strong hand, He will take them down. V'yisereini milechet b'derech ha'am hazeh leimor. And Hashem also chastised me, Hashem warned me, the Navi says, milechet, from going biderech ha'am hazeh, in the way of this nation, saying the following. And now he is referencing a problem that we had internally. Number one, Hashem said, don't be scared from the external forces, Sancheiriv. V'yisereini, and secondly, Hashem also warned me, milechet, from going biderech ha'am hazeh, the way of this nation. And the Navi over here is describing the internal struggle. There was a great politician named Shevna, who was high up in the hierarchy in the command of Judea, and he was convinced that he would give over Jerusalem into the hands of the Assyrian Empire, and then he would reign over the Jews. So he led a rebellion. He had a tremendous number of people with him, The people with him outnumbered the people who were loyal to the king, Chizkiyahu. So there's a siege going on inside Jerusalem, outside Jerusalem, and inside Jerusalem you have an internal struggle where there's this great politician, Shevna, who is leading a rebellion to give Jerusalem over into the hands of Sanherib. So Hashem tells Yeshayahu, he says, do not worry about the external threat. Sanherib will not be successful. And be careful with the internal threat. Don't join forces with them because they're not going to succeed. And Yeshayahu turns to Hashem and says, but shouldn't the majority win? Shevna has the larger number of people on his side. So Hashem answers him and says, Lo tomerun kesher lechol asher yomar ha'am hazeh kasher. Hashem says, no. Don't consider the grouping that the nation considers a group. Yeshayahu thought that Shevna's group, because they outnumbered their group, should be victorious. We should go with the majority opinion. And Hashem says, no. Not every idea that the nation concocts and unites behind is called an idea, a grouping. You have to have a vote. It's not enough that you have the majority. The question is, do you have a vote? Do you have a party? The fact that you have an idea doesn't mean anything. Lo tomerun kesher. Don't give credence to the group. Kesher is a group, a uniting. Lechol asher yomar ha'am hazeh kasher. To any idea that the nation decides to group behind, that doesn't mean that that group has the name, they're a group. They don't count. And here the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us an important rule, that kesher resha'im eino min haminyan. If wicked people form a party, that's not called a party. That's not called a uniting. Kesher resha'im, the unification of wicked people, eino min haminyan, that doesn't count. So even though they're arguing against Chizkiyahu, and Chizkiyahu is outnumbered, their group has the majority, Hashem says, no, they don't count. Lo tomerun kesher. Don't consider it a group. That's not even a valid party. Yeah.
I have two things that I wanted to clarify. First, I thought the point that you were bringing over was that it needs to be more official. That's why it's not coming, because it's not official. And it seems like in the end, like the point was that because they're Rasha'im, it doesn't matter what they're saying. Are both of those valid? Or
no, the second one. Ve'et mora'o lo tire'u ve'lo ta'aritzu. Let's see. I would quote you the Gemara inside. Here we go. There was a man, the Gemara says, named Shevna. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, the 26th page. He used to have 130,000 listeners when he'd give a speech. That was how big his party was. Chizkiyahu only had 110,000. So Sanherib came and laid siege on Jerusalem, and Shevna sent word out to Sanherib and said to him, my group has decided to make peace with you, and I have the bigger numbers. Chizkiyahu was worried maybe the Ribbon Shel Olam said, I'll go with the majority opinion. If the majority of Jerusalem, 130,000 people, are siding with Shevna to give Jerusalem over into the hands of the Assyrian Empire, maybe God says, fine, let them have it. Along comes the Navi and tells him right here, Lo tomerun kesher, meaning, kesher reshaim eino min haminyan. God says, I don't count the grouping of the wicked. Just because they formed a group, 130,000 people, that doesn't count by me, God says. A wicked group doesn't count. Shevna went to dig himself a grave in the special graveyard of kings. Shevna said, I'm the leader here. So Chizkiyahu's the king, but technically I'm the one in charge. I'm pulling the strings. And that's why we'll see later on, much later in the book, the Navi tells him, who do you think you are? What do you think you're going to get buried here? That's not going to happen. And Chazal tell us that God made Shevna become a Mitzora. He turned white as alabaster. He had tzaras. And then he was shamed because Shevna sent word to Sancheiriv, I'm bringing out my forces to give Jerusalem over into your hands. And Hashem sent the angel Gavriel, and when Shevna went out, the doors shut behind him, and the 130,000 people were stuck inside the city, and Shevna was stuck out of the city. So he decides he's pushing forward. He goes before the general, and the general tells him, where's that big group you promised me? He says, well, they had a change of heart. I promised, and they changed their minds, but I didn't. So he figures, okay, the king will at least like him. So the king tells him, so you're full of baloney. So you made fun of me. You think you're going to make fun of me? He had his men make holes in Shevna's heels, and then they hung him by the tails of horses, and they dragged him across the thorns, and that's how he died. That's the end of Shevna. Shevna thought he'd get buried in this honorable burial plot. He would take the reins from Chizkiyahu, and Hashem says, no, that's not what I have in mind. And so Shevna's end, that was Shevna's end. The Gemara then goes through how Chizkiyahu was pious, and Chizkiyahu would be modest in his meals, as we discussed previously, and Shevna would have these lavish meals, and people would look at Chizkiyahu and say, what kind of king are you? How come you just eat a slice of bread and salty water every day? That's not the way a king should behave. They'd keep comparing him to Shevna, who would have these lavish meals. And Chizkiyahu was right. So that's the word that the Navi gets over here. Lo tomerun keshel. Don't just give validity, don't give credence to any grouping just because the people think it should be a group. If it's a group of wicked people, I don't give it any credence.
So, is that a general rule?
Yes. The Gemara makes it a general rule, yeah.
So that God doesn't have groups of wicked people, so what would define and or exceed the definition for a group of wicked people? Like, are the Nazis considered a group of wicked people that God doesn't count them, or and what does it mean that God doesn't count them? Because they were real.
They were elected, sort of democratic, but it's a good
example. So the truth is, the Gemara brings it. If you guys want to go off on that tangent, then it'll be a long tangent. The Gemara actually brings it regarding Jews. Do we want to take that 5-minute tangent to learn the Gemara beforehand?
5 minutes. Sure.
5 minutes is, yes, on a Friday morning, 5 minutes is precious. But okay, you want to, we'll do it. So it's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara before that brings a story where Rabbi Chiya bar Zarnuki and Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadak were going to have that special conference about whether they should make it a leap year or not. And Reish Lakish tagged along as they were traveling, so they saw a man plowing. So Reish Lakish said, he's a Kohen, and he's plowing, and it's a Shemitah. Shouldn't we ostracize him? Shouldn't we make a public declaration? We're a group that's going together to do such a holy thing, to dedicate to make it into a leap year. We shouldn't just ignore what we're passing by, a Kohen that's plowing the field on Shemitah. So they said, nah, you don't know, maybe the field is owned by a non-Jew, and he's just working for the non-Jew. Maybe it's owned by the king, and he has to plow the field to pay his taxes. You don't know, we don't have to get involved. So, fine. They continue traveling. They see another guy, and he's cutting down the extra branches in the grapevine. That's a malacha. It says biblically, these two actions it says in the Torah you can't do on Shemitah. Again, he said to them, he's a Kohen, and he's cutting down branches from the grapevine on Shemitah. Shouldn't we go and ostracize him and take a halachic action against him? Again, they said to him, what are you so worried about? Maybe what he needed was a piece of wood for his olive press. He's just taking wood that he needs. He's not really working the fields. You could say that he's doing something permissible. You don't know what's really going on. Maybe there's a different story behind it. No, you don't have to get so excited. So he looked at them and he said, okay, you guys are telling me stories. Every time you're going to see someone doing work on Shemitah, you're going to think another reason why maybe that's okay. But God knows where your hearts are. That you guys, obviously, you don't care. You're going to dedicate the new year, but you really don't care that Jews are transgressing. So they're traveling. And then when they come to the attic that they're supposed to go up to dedicate the new year, to make it into a leap year, and Reish Lakish wanted to hear their calculations and how they come to the bottom line, they said, Truda Hudain. He's a nudnik. He's a pain in the neck. We're not letting him in. Everything we're going to do, he's going to ask us a million questions. We're not letting him up into the attic. So they went up to the attic and they pulled up the ladder after them, and they left Reish Lakish down on the ground floor, and after all that, they leave him out of the calculations. So Reish Lakish got upset. He went to the head of the academy, Rabbi Yochanan, and he said, men who are suspect over Shviyas, men who you can't trust to maintain the Shemitah properly, you trust them to make it a leap year? They're going to decide whether it's a leap year or not? How could they be the ones to dedicate the new year? So the Gemara says, what was he so worried about? The Gemara says, his claim was, Kesher Rishaim Eino Min HaMinyan. He said, the fact that they unite as a court, it doesn't count. Even if they make the right calling to make it into a leap year, they don't have the right to unite as a court and make a ruling. Kesher Rishaim Eino Min HaMinyan, the Gemara initially quotes about a court, about a Jewish court, who has wicked people in it. So then that court's ruling doesn't take effect, even on something like this of calling it a leap year. So Rav Yochanan was very upset at Reish Lakish. What are you calling them wicked people for? But Reish Lakish did. So you see, Reish Lakish was very zealous. We see that throughout the Shas. And the first time we encounter that, then the Gemara continues to say, where do you get this idea from of Kesher Hashem? And gives you the whole story of Shevna. But in fact, the Gemara says it about Jews. You said Nazis. What was Reish Lakish talking about? He was talking about a Jewish court, chief rabbis who he went to learn from, but he felt they weren't zealous enough, so he said, that's Rishayim. You can't, that their leap year shouldn't count.
Who gives somebody the authority to say that? What makes Rav Lakish necessarily greater than these two people?
Oh, so Reish Lakish was going to the chief rabbi, Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan was calling the shots, and Reish Lakish came to him and said, how could you entrust this court? These people aren't to be trusted. They're not righteous people. So Rav Yochanan answers him and says, Da'aka. He says, you know, this is what bothers me, that you're so zealous, you're willing to call them Rishayim just because you don't agree. And Reish Lakish doesn't buy it, meaning Reish Lakish gives them the authorization. Yeah. Rav Yochanan, right. Rav Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, Rav Yochanan was the Rebbe, Says to Reish Lakish, you know, this is what hurts me, that you're willing to call them Rishayim. But let's say they would be plowing the field on Shemitah, if they really couldn't be trusted on Shemitah, then that would be enough. They didn't have to be Nazis. You see, from Rav Yochanan, he says, I don't agree with you that you're willing to call them Rishayim. But if he'd agree with him, if they really were people who were doing work on Shemitah, so then Rav Yochanan would agree that their ruling doesn't carry weight.
Very relevant to that, even within the religious community. No, I mean, you know.